I'm Farai Chidea here with Todd Zwillick. We are in for John Hockenberry. There is some chilling video released this weekend of the first American soldier to be captured by the Taliban since the war started in Afghanistan.
Well, I am scared. I'm scared I won't be able to go home. It is very unnerving to be a prisoner.
That's 23-year-old Private Bo Bergdahl, who was serving with an infantry regiment in eastern Afghanistan. Reportedly, the soldier was last seen walking away from his base near the Pakistan border in an area known to be a Taliban stronghold. Nicholas Schmidl has reported from Pakistan. In fact, he's the author of To Live or to Perish Forever, Two Tumultuous Years Inside Pakistan. He's also a fellow at the New America Foundation. Nick, how are you?
Thanks for having me on, Farai. I'm doing well. Thanks.
So what do we know about who's holding Private Bergdahl and what's being done to secure his release?
Well, we unfortunately don't know much. The reports are suggesting that he was grabbed by local Taliban and then sort of sold up the chain to potentially the Haqqani Network, the group that is based in Khost, Afghanistan, and in North Waziristan of Pakistan. The only individual who has said something publicly about his capture is a guy named Mullah Sangin, who was an associate of the Haqqani Network. And within 48 hours of his disappearance, this guy had said that that the soldier would be killed if there was any raids or anything that came on to them.
Now, we're seeing militarily some new tactics by the Taliban, increased use of IEDs in Afghanistan. Are those tactics ones that are coming from Iraq?
It's hard to say exactly where they're coming from. We're certainly seeing more of them. Now, it's hard to know whether there are just more bomb makers and more jihadis coming from Iraq or whether there are smarter jihadis and bomb makers coming from Iraq that are bringing technology with them. And I don't know that we can answer that question now. I do think, though, that much of the technology and the know-how can simply be transferred over the internet. And I think that the Taliban's internet, I mean, the Al-Qaeda's internet setup is quite sophisticated at this point. So the technology could simply be moving over the internet.
I want to talk a little bit about the non-explosive, non-battle, non-gun strategy that is the communications war. Nick, let's listen to another clip of Private Bergdahl.
To my fellow Americans who have loved ones over here, who know what it's like to miss them, you have the power to make our government bring them home. Please, please bring us home so that we can be back where we belong and not over here wasting our time and our lives and our precious life that we could be using back in our own country. Please bring us home.
Nick, that is plaintive, to say the least. And, no one can imagine being in that situation, but it is of an emotional tone where it will no doubt get to, get under the skin of ordinary Americans as well as make the military, the urgency of this clear. When you have this kind of a video of a man who's been captured for weeks, what does it do in that communications war between the Taliban and the United States?
Well, I'm really glad you played that clip because I think that that is perhaps the most befuddling clip so far that we've seen from any of the captures and the kidnappings of late in the border areas. In that they make, I mean, the demands are obviously demands that are not going to be met, and yet they are very concrete. And I think that in the past we've heard demands that have been, we need to get Israel out of Palestine, by the end of the week or something like that. And so these are concrete demands that should the Taliban have concrete goals and objectives in Afghanistan, which are hard to conflate, which, we obviously have to be careful not to conflate with those of Al-Qaeda. And I think that it's an interesting sort of, like you said, it's an interesting shot in the propaganda war. I'm not exactly sure what it means. I'm not exactly sure where what it means in terms of the Taliban's priorities over those of Al-Qaeda in this area and sort of who's calling the shots between them.
Nick, the Taliban's priorities, this is Todd Zwillick here, but what about American commanders in a situation like this, not only pursuing their own strategy, but as Farai said, pursuing the propaganda war against the Taliban. They're holding one of our own. They're producing videos. You're a colonel. You're a general in Afghanistan. What does this do to their strategy, and how do they approach this now? They walk a finer line.
Well, yeah, you're right. The other thing is it inherently makes you a little bit more emotional, and I think that that's what the Taliban want, because I think that that's how people make mistakes. And if you're an American colonel right now in Afghanistan, excuse me, you are thinking right now, how do we get the soldier out? And you're thinking about sort of nighttime Delta Force raids and things like that that are inherently going to also take some risk. And so I think that it's the thing about this video is that it's such a there's nothing that you can really counter it with at this point. And so right. I think that right now they feel somewhat like their hands are tied.
Well, thank you so much. We've been speaking with Nicholas Schmidl, a fellow at the New America Foundation and author of To Live or to Perish Forever, Two Tumultuous Years Inside Pakistan. Now we have someone who is in the region. Wall Street Journal reporter Anand Gopal joins us from Kabul, Afghanistan. We want to know what the military situation is on the ground. It's been a bloody month. What is going on militarily?
This has been a bloody month. It's actually, we've reached record numbers in terms of soldiers killed. We're averaging about 3 a day. At the same time, there's an offensive going on in the south, which is the largest coordinated U.S. offensive in the whole war. It's about 4,000 Marines that are going and trying to root out the Taliban from various strongholds. Because of these sorts of offensives and because insurgencies have a larger presence this year, we're seeing much higher casualty rates.
You have also been writing about eastern Afghanistan, where villagers have begun attacking the Taliban. What's happening there? What made them change their position?
This is a particular district in the Indian-Pakistan border, which has been targeted by the Taliban for a number of years. And over the last few months, a few government officials have come to the village and promised them jobs and development if they would break their ties with the militants. And so there was an incident over the weekend in which Taliban fighters tried to kidnap a police officer. This led to clashes, and the villagers actually came and captured the Taliban fighters and handed them over to the police, which is sort of an unprecedented move. Now, this is still just an isolated thing, but officials hope that they can sort of replicate this throughout the region.
Anand, this attempt to triangulate villagers against the Taliban really sounds like the strategy that was used in the Sunni Awakening in Iraq, getting some of the tribal elders and people on our side, sometimes with cash, sometimes with political power. Am I drawing an accurate parallel between these two things?
Yes, it is accurate. It's a little more complicated here in Afghanistan because in Iraq they were able to get Sunni tribesmen to fight against outsiders or perceived outsiders, which was Al-Qaeda. Here in Afghanistan, in the villages, the Taliban are the brothers and the sons of the various people that Western officials are trying to target. So it's much more difficult to separate these elements out.
When you take a look at the video of Private Bergdahl, do you think that the U.S. will pursue a military option for release or some kind of negotiation? Is it even possible for the U.S. to negotiate with the Taliban?
It's very unlikely that they'll try to negotiate. And what we've seen in the past, there have been other Westerners that have been abducted, for example, NGO workers. And the U.S. military has been involved in trying to free them using special forces. In the region in which the soldier was taken, the U.S. has blanketed the area with leaflets, some promising rewards for any information leading to his retrieval, and others threatening villagers who may have information and withhold it.
Well, I want to thank you so much. Really important information from Kabul, Afghanistan, Wall Street Journal reporter Anand Gopal. I want to go back to Nicholas Schmidl at the New America Foundation. Negotiation, just very quickly, the issue of negotiating with the Taliban. Anand said, no way, not going to happen. What do you think?
Well, I think that it's happening at one level. I don't know that it's happening with these particular commanders who are holding the soldier, but I do think that U.S. military strategy right now is about trying to find irreconcilables and to try and convince them to sort of, you know, turn sides, if you will, like you mentioned, in the Anbar Awakening.
Is this a pivotal moment for the U.S. in Afghanistan?
I think that remains to be seen whether this is any more of a pivotal moment in Afghanistan than, say, the 4,000 soldiers who landed in Helmand a few weeks ago has been. I think that, like I said, it remains to be seen how this all plays out, whether the special forces go in, whether negotiations do take place that we don't know about.
All right. Thanks again, Nicholas Schmidl, fellow at the New America Foundation, author of To Live or to Perish Forever, Two Tumultuous Years Inside Pakistan.
Thanks for having me on.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.